Hello, everyone. It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The spring training games have begun down in Arizona, and we're here to chat a little bit about it. Some developments. Unfortunately, if there are big time developments in spring training, it's usually because something went wrong. A little bit went wrong this week. Joining me to talk about it is my colleague Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. We, of course, have been covering the Brewers, or will be covering the Brewers all year long. Todd, the biggest news, unfortunately, like I said, not great. Blake Perkins fouled the ball off of his shin, which means he's not going to be available probably until May, it sounds like. That takes away possibly one of the team's best defenders, certainly one of their best outfield defenders. And obviously, that is a blow. They've actually made some roster moves in relation to that, which we will discuss. But just first and foremost, the loss of Perkins, what do you think it means for this team? And I don't know if you got a chance to talk to him specifically about, you know, kind of what his spirits are after kind of a fluky thing. We saw this with Christian Yelich a couple of years ago. These things are tough, you know, they're random, and it's a big loss for the Brewers.
Yeah, I spoke to him this morning, tweeted out the video. He's in pretty good spirits, all things considered. Just a fluke thing. It's hard to be mad about it. And as he said, if something like this is going to happen, this is a good time for it to happen, you know. So he doesn't even have to – they don't even have like a walking boot for him or anything. He's literally just walking around. You would never know that something was wrong. So they're going to give him three, four weeks to let the bone kind of knit and heal up. And then from that point they can, you know, consider – kind of starting to ramp him up. Getting at bats is obviously going to be the big thing for him. So in the meantime, as you mentioned, you know, the Brewers have done a few things here. They announced the Manuel Margot signing today, a little bit of depth. And then, you know, there are reports out there that they've agreed to terms with Mark Canna as well. Did not see him around today. That's not uncommon. I'm sure he's, you know, they're giving him a few days to get the physical, get moved in and everything, but kind of a cool little reunion between the two parties. You know, Canna was very productive for the Brewers in 23 when they traded for him at the deadline. And in adding him, I think he gives the Brewers a little bit more versatility, a little bit more offensive pop, I think. Can't play center, but can play the outfield corners. They would look at him at first base. And it would also give him another right-handed hitter to slide into the lineup at times. That's kind of what you're missing with Perkins, right? You know, like you got a tough lefty on the mound, and, you know, rather than starting Garrett Mitchell against him, you could put Perkins in there as a switch hitter. You know, his offense is clearly secondary, but still he can do some things, and we all know about his defense. So, yeah, not great, but, again, could be worse. Not a starter, you know, not a setback for somebody like Brandon Woodruff or something like that. So you just kind of do what you can and keep rolling on and let Perkins heal up.
Yeah, Manuel Margot and Mark Canna, two probably sides of the same coin. Margot, he struggled pretty badly offensively last year. I think there's a hope that he can contribute defensively. And then you have Canna, who 2 years ago was pretty productive when he was acquired midseason. Ultimately, he's not a needle mover, but you could do a lot worse if you're just picking up a guy off of the scrap heap in February offensively. But then the question is, where, you know, can he play outfield still? How, you know, would he be more of a first baseman if he ultimately made this team? I guess I'm curious what the chances are you think either one of those guys does make this team, because we know they have depth in the outfield. That's the one area that you could say pretty safely they have depth. They could theoretically go with who they have, you know, if Garrett Mitchell is healthy. But what are the odds you think at least one of those two guys or both of those guys makes this team?
Both won't make it. The tea leaves right now, I would think Canna would be the far greater option just because of the versatility that he provides. Yeah. You know, some more right-handed pop. You know, there's familiarity there too. You know, Margot, maybe a few years ago, you'd be a little bit more excited, but he had a dreadful year last year with the Twins, not only offensively, but defensively. He rated as the second worst outfielder in baseball. Yeah. So it's just not, you know, I'm looking at him right now, and I think the Brewers are looking at him right now as his kind of triple A depth. You know, you you get him through waivers and you outright him to Nashville. I think he kind of understands that. And then he's depth in case you really run into problems down the line. So, you know, we'll see. Be interested to see talk to Mark Canna when he gets here. Maybe it'll be tomorrow on Monday and see what he thinks about it all. But, you know, like you said, could do worse. And a familiar face guy, you know, will always live in Brewer lore for that grand slam against the Nationals.
Oh, for sure.
Everybody remembers in 2023.
Yeah.
So, you know, welcome back.
Yeah, that was a great moment. I was going to bring that up at some point, September 16th or something. I don't remember the date, of course, but right in that home stretch of the playoff chase in 2023, that was quite the moment. As far as this roster being complete, I mean, I don't know if you feel like there's more moves to be made. Kurt and I talked a lot about how the infield still feels incomplete to me, and maybe not. Maybe they are going to be able to make it make do with the guys that they have. The pitching staff, I think, could always use an upgrade. Jose Quintana is out there. I know the Mets, you know, it would make sense that the Mets bring him back. Both Ken Rosenthal and Bob Nightingale, which we'll talk more about that right when they wrote about Mark Adonazio early in the week, as did you. They both mentioned Jose Quintana. I don't know if there's any actual smoke or fire to go with that smoke, but what do you think? Do you think this team still has a signing or two in them, or is this it? Is this what we're going to see?
Anybody who's followed the Brewers knows they're always on the lookout. You know, that this has been kind of their MO every year. They look around, see what's out there, what they can afford financially, what makes sense for them, and try to pick up a few guys on the cheap. So you got Margot in camp, you're going to add Canna. And I think as camp rolls along, then they'll start making their decisions elsewhere. So let's say you get through camp, two-thirds of the way through camp, and the Caleb Durbin, Andrew Monasterio, Oliver Dunn, three-headed monster at third base, and maybe throwing Capra too, has not really been inspiring, then I think there's a possibility that they look externally and try to add somebody. Maybe they wait until, you know, teams have to cut down and then try to pick somebody up that way, or maybe they make a trade or something. But, you know, I don't have any issue with them using the majority of spring training to try to see what they have. You know, maybe Oliver Dunn gets on a heater, you know, and starts smacking the ball around. I know they really do like him, and his year was ended prematurely in 24 with a herniated disc in his back. He's back. He's looks a little bit more bulked up, a little stronger. And, you know, I think they'd really like to see what they have in him. And Pat Murphy did not dismiss out of hand the possibility of, if they don't add anybody externally, just going kind of with a righty-lefty platoon over there at third base. Maybe it winds up being Durbin and Dunn. Maybe it winds up being Monasterio and Dunn. Now, that's a possibility as well. Is it exciting? No.
It is what it is.
And just, again, reading the tea leaves and what's been said and what's been going on, I would – definitely think right now that Joey Ortiz, they're looking at him as the shortstop. So I'll just be interested to see if and when they start giving Terang some reps over there and what happens with that. So we're only through game two here in the spring. So a lot of stuff you have to shake out.
I mean, as you know, I am certainly willing to react to a two game sample. That's absolutely in my vocabulary. I think Durbin and Dunn make sense. Like, let's say they make no more moves. That seems like the obvious thing, right? Have Durbin and Dunn in a platoon at third base, and maybe one of them emerges over the course of the season. I don't know if Monasterio makes this team unless they really just feel like they have to have that other utility guy. You know, Jake Bowers will be here as the backup first baseman, presumably. That's probably not set in stone, but that would make sense, I guess, at this point. I don't know. Like, would you be willing to say, like, Durbin Dunn feels right? That feels like the obvious answer that they're. I thought maybe they'd try Tyler Black over at third base. Like, I didn't think that was realistic. But then I thought maybe they're secretly like going to put him back at third base, and then he was taking reps at first base. So much for that idea. But I don't know. Like, Durbin Dunn feels like the default to me. Maybe that's too strong. I don't know.
I think that's too strong right now. This is Durbin's a kid who's never played in the majors yet, and
Dunn barely has too. Yeah,
I don't think that. I don't think that we really know much about him defensively. Can he handle the position? You know, I think he's definitely more of a natural second baseman. If you're going to go with a platoon over there and you want that left-handed bat over there in Oliver Dunn, you know, right now, early in camp, I would give the nod to Monasterio just because he's the known commodity. Coaching staff is comfortable with him. You know, is he a world beater? Of course not, but he's reliable. And the other thing that he brings to the table, too, is he is one of only a few guys that can also back up at shortstop. That's a very important factor. Remember, you need a backup there. And if Ortiz is going to be the starter, you need a guy that can back him up. Durbin is not going to be playing shortstop. That's what we were told in camp. You mentioned Tyler Black. He's going to get some time at third base, but it sounds like they want to look at him more at first base. So just a lot of moving pieces, and it's much different than it's been in years past, where things have kind of been, you know, for the most part solidified. I mean, Willy Adames was a rock at shortstop. We knew last year that Rhys Hoskins was going to be the first baseman. You know, we had good sense that Bryce Terang was going to, you know, have a good year overall. I don't think anybody expected a platinum glove out of him, but we expected development out of him. So just a lot of balls in the air right now, I would say, as far as the infield goes for the Brewers.
I go back to a couple seasons ago. At this time, I would have not dreamed that Bryce Terang would have opened the season as the team's second baseman. I hadn't thought of that. And then, you know, late in camp, it became obvious that's what the Brewers were intending to do and have him start on opening day. That really surprised me when it happened. So I keep scrambling, you know, trying to think of an idea. You know, what am I missing? Because it does feel like that infield is incomplete. Like, what strategy could they implement that I haven't thought about yet? And part of that puzzle is Tyler Black, in that I have no idea what happens here. Like, I don't know if he goes back to AAA and never makes it as a big leaguer. I don't know if he becomes one of the best hitters on this team. It feels so contingent on him finding that spot on the infield. And we know defense is a struggle for him. I can't imagine this team can afford to have him on here as a backup first baseman, because if Rhys Hoskins is your regular guy, you got to have somebody who can play first base well. That's Jake Bowers. And then, you know, I don't know what that does for Tyler Black if they find like a super utility spot for him. Do you have any sense what does your crystal ball say about Tyler Black? And I'm not talking about the first couple games or what, you know, it's more just an overall feeling on where he fits, what you think the future is for him.
Yeah, I would think to me, what you have in Tyler Black is one of the most important things you need to come out of spring training with if you're the Brewers. You know, here's this highly touted prospect, 33rd overall pick in the 2021 draft. But when you start looking at comps and parallels and stuff, he's not accomplished near what Keston Hira did in his rookie year. But to me, there's comparisons to be made, because Keston Hira had no defensive home, and that's already looking like what Tyler Black is. Tyler Black, I think, has a more sound offensive game. He's not gonna hit the 19 homers like Hira did his rookie year, but you know, he's gonna be a gap hitter. He's got great idea of the strike zone for a young player, and he's a terrific base stealer as well. So all those pieces fit really well into the Brewers' offensive attack, and gives Pat Murphy another set of legs that he can, you know, wreak some havoc with on the base pass. So to me, even though Tyler Black did not play in the first two games here so far this spring, I don't know if he's really, if he's fighting something minor or whatever, something nagging going on, or if that's just part of the plan. But I would assume that by the end of spring training, if he's not in the top five on the team and at bats, I would be shocked, just because you got to get him out there. You got to see what he can do. And to me, if he can prove that he can play some third base and at least be capable over there in addition to playing first base, that goes a long way toward you know, maybe solidifying in the Brewers' minds that this is a guy that, you know, you can keep on that opening day roster, the 26-man roster. So he's a really good kid. He's very conscientious. You know, he's fought through some things in the minor leagues, injuries and whatnot. And if you read my story from last week, he was pretty honest about how it was a little disappointing year for him in 24 because he didn't take care of business. His diet wasn't very good. He wasn't getting the right sleep and everything. And he pegged that as part of the reason for his struggles. Rick Sweet was pretty honest and open about he thought that the ABS negatively impacted him as well when he was in the majors.
Yeah. You hear a lot about that.
Yeah, and that's something that we're seeing now in spring training games. So, hopefully those two things kind of have been squared away and he can come out and have a good camp and establish himself. Because if he can, he looks like a player that really, like I said before, fits the Brewers' MO to a T in many ways and could give him somebody that can do a multitude of things.
Yeah, I know we've talked about the ABS before in concept, but seeing it play out today on Sunday is I can't wait for it to get here because it's so quick, it's so fluid. There was a very obvious, in my opinion, strike three call that Craig Yoho had racked up that was called a ball. They challenged it, and boom, it's a strike, and the at bat ends. I love it, and I'm sure Tyler Black will too. The worry being that he is so good with the strike zone and so good at being able to challenge that he isn't offering it pitches that he needs to offer at, because in the big leagues, the zone maybe is a little different, a little more amorphous. In his absence, you got Vinny Capra hitting 2-3 run home runs to win a game for the Brewers on Saturday. I don't think Vinny Capra is going to bring power to the table. This is a guy who's got 30 career home runs in the minor leagues, I think, since 2019. So hitting 2-1 game is quite the feat, but there's another guy who I can't tell you the future here. I know the team likes him because he's the type of player that you wouldn't necessarily see a team keep on the 40-man roster over an offseason, because he's kind of, you think of him as a utility guy, a guy who could be found elsewhere, but here they kept him. They clearly like him. It certainly doesn't hurt his cause to get 6 RBIs and 2 home runs in the first game. That's not what he's here for, I'm sure. What about Vinny Capra? We got to talk about him a little bit since he had such a good day. I know one game does not a career make, but what about his role on this team, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pat Murphy said it all after the game on Saturday where he hit the 2-3-run home runs. There's a comfort level the Brewers have with him. They've got a whole year plus invested in him, and they know they know what they have in him. Is he going to go out and hit, have 2-3 home run? 2-3 run homers in one game during the regular season, highly unlikely. But he's a guy who at least can hold his own offensively and is going to be reliable at third base, shortstop, and second base. So there's value in that. And, from a sentimental standpoint or a story standpoint, you like to see these overachiever guys get a chance. And sometimes they'll surprise you. Is he overly physically gifted? No, of course not. But, it's a guy that's kind of kicked around. He's gotten cups of coffee with the Blue Jays and the Pirates. And then he had, I think, 3 games last year with the Brewers too. So just another one of those kind of fun camp stories that you follow. And we'll see what he does over the remainder of spring training. And personality-wise, everything, he's just everything that, you picture a veteran will be. Just, conscientious, studious, professional, good teammate, all checks all the boxes. So it's again, a guy that really any team would probably like to have in their clubhouse. It's just a matter of fit, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if I said it right. The 30 home runs. He has no big league home runs. I was talking about his minor league career.
Yeah, in the minors. You said in the minors.
Oh, I did. Okay. That actually dates back to 2018 with Toronto. I didn't realize. So he has been around in a while, still looking for that first big league homer. Maybe this is the year. I don't think he has options left, so that might come into play. Options are going to be a big deal when they shake out this roster, especially in the bullpen, things like that. So that might come into play. Keeping on in the small sample theater range, we saw Aaron Ashby start on Sunday. It did not go well. He did not get out of the first inning. His defense did not help him out, but he also walked a couple guys, gave up, I think, 4 runs. Obviously one sample, 5 batters or whatever it was, but you kind of want to see Ashby really hit it right out of the gate after he finished so strong at the end of the season last year as a reliever. I think the jury is still way out on whether or not he is going to be a starting pitcher in the big leagues. I think after last year, people are probably leaning more toward the reliever side of things. But with DL Hall out, he's kind of that obvious next guy up. And he was signed here to be a starting pitcher. He's a guy that I'm sure they'd like to see in that rotation. Not so much about today, about Sunday's start, but just you know, what do you feel like they need to see something from him in spring training? I don't know if you think that he's on track to be a starting pitcher in this rotation, but like where's your head at with Aaron Ashby? What do you think the Brewers still want to see here?
I think he's the prohibitive favorite right now with DL Hall on the sidelines still. I think Ashby's the prohibitive favorite to be the number five starter. Of course, lots to yet to shake out, as I keep saying. We're only two games into the Cactus League season, but it's a guy that's got experience. He's finally healthy. That's the biggest thing. I wrote about that today. I'll throw the numbers out the window. It's two-thirds of an inning in his first start. It's not about the numbers at this point. It's about the process. It's about getting back out there, facing hitters. And most importantly, when you get back into the clubhouse after, knowing that your shoulder's fine, you're in a good headspace, and you can go about a normal spring training and just go about your normal five-day routine like starters do and not have to worry about all the other stuff. You know, there's plenty of time left to start fine-tuning and tweaking and starting to really get into game situations and everything like that. So I would never put a lot of stock really in any start this early in spring. I wrote this too, like think back a year ago. Remember when he made his first start, how bad that was? I mean, he just got crushed. You know, like you're like, my God, is this guy ever going to pitch in the majors again? There were doubts, really. You know, it was that ugly. And I tip my cap to him because it's been such a long road, and Brandon Woodruff is kind of getting to the end of his road too, as far as the comeback trail goes. It's such a grind, and it was such a cool story last year to see Ashby, like all of a sudden, just like, it was like that one day he got a bolt of lightning back in his arm and he's throwing, 98 again, like he used to, when nobody ever thought that was going to happen. So this guy with a world of talent remains to be seen long-term. I think what role he fits in numbers wise over the course of his career, he's been much better in relief than he has starting, but you don't want to take that opportunity away from a guy who is so talented like Ashby. You want to give him a bunch of opportunities until he just absolutely proves that he can't do it. And then relief is always there as plan B.
So you mentioned Brandon Woodruff. I feel like that's one of the bigger stories in camp is how he's looked. He's had a couple opportunities now to face live batters. He obviously hasn't been in one of these first two games, but what's the vibe around Brandon Woodruff? Like, is there any semblance of a timetable as to when he might be available to really, really pitch, pitch in game action? And kind of where do you think they stand right now?
It's very, very optimistic. Everybody's really happy with the progress he's made so far. Number one on the top of that list is Brandon Woodruff himself. Again, for the road that he's traveled to get back, he's checked all the boxes. He's gotten through these first two live batting practice sessions perfectly fine. His velo, I think he told us, was 92 the other day, which, again, considering where he came from, that's not bad at all. He's still got time to, kind of crank that up. But I think we also have to consider that probably until midseason, he's going to have to be a different pitcher. This is not going to be a guy that's going to be able to go out and, hump it up to 98 like he used to and just blow guys away. He's going to have to start maybe nibbling a little bit more, coming at hitters a different way. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So, it's just checking the boxes moving forward for him. Next time it's going to have to be kind of like a simulated game. He'll get a couple of up downs, probably slowly start stretching him out, getting his stamina back up. And then I think you start looking at getting him into Cactus League games. They're keeping it very open-ended, very loose, no timetables here because they want to keep the pressure off of him. And I totally understand that. So if I had to guess, looking in my magic eight ball, my crystal ball, I would say if there's no setbacks and he just continues to progress as he has been, I think a late April, early May return to the rotation would be realistic at this point.
Oh man, that'd be huge for the Brewers, especially if he's, you know, if he's effective right out of the gate. I want to talk a little about Mark Adonisio. He held court as he typically does at the start of spring training, spoke to reporters kind of about the state of the team a little bit. And there was a quote from, I guess we could call him our colleague at USA Today, Bob Nightingale, who he wrote it. So here's the quote. Here's the quote that caught a lot of people's attention. This is Mark Adonisio saying, "Is my job to win a World Series, or is my job to provide a summer of entertainment and passion and a way for families to come together?" Now, the implication is that he's saying which one is more important, that you have to choose between one of those two things. The actual quote, which you were there for, you were there for this sort of media session. It's a little more rambling. This is not unusual for Mark Adonisio. He will often have tangents in the middle of sentences and things like that. It's a little more nuanced than that. I don't think he was really framing it quite like how Bob Nightingale framed it. But I'd be curious to know what you gleaned from that. You know, you could talk about that specific exchange, but also just in general, he was asked questions about why this team hasn't spent a lot of money on free agents. They've spent almost no money on free agents this offseason, despite having a competitive team. Kind of what you kind of, in your mind, see is Mark Adonisio's, you know, viewpoint on this whole thing. And if it is about being frugal, or if it is about truly just making baseball decisions and the money will follow that, like what did you take away from that whole session?
So number one, I was sitting directly across from Mark Adonisio at this table. I listened to his answer. And after the session was done, we went back down to the workroom, Adam McAlvey and myself, and we listened to the audio. And we listened to it again, and we listened to it again, and we looked at our transcription apps, you know, and looked at the transcription and read that and listened to the audio again. You hit it right on the head. Mark Adonisio is very verbose, and he basically, it was a word salad, you know, and people and Bob cherry picked out of there what worked for him. And I'm not casting aspersions on Bob. Great reporter, love the guy, colleague and everything. But I think Bob and Ken Rosenthal both came in with definite agendas, you know, and what it's not common for MLB teams to make their owners available, and you know, like sending out notice in advance, letting people know, hey, you know, our owner's going to be talking. So, you know, they took advantage of it. They got over there and they asked some tough questions. I give them credit. You know, they, both of them, you know, repeatedly asked Mark in different ways. We all did about, you know, why they're not spending money, you know, what's your philosophy on building a roster, et cetera, et cetera. So going back to that answer, you know, the question didn't even really pertain to what, how Mark answered it. Number one, Adam McAlvey asked, if I remember right, it was something like, do you ever foresee spending the money, or, you know, giving out another Yelich type contract, you know, like a, you know, $200+ million contract. And he said, absolutely. You know, bottom line, yes, it's a possibility, but then we had all this other stuff. So in my opinion, you know, a lot of it was taken out of context. Brewers fans are hypersensitive when it comes to Mark Adonisio not spending money. We all know this. Everybody likes to complain about it. Whatever, you're entitled to your opinion. I just say, again, from the outside looking in, as somebody who grew up in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, lived there their whole life, who as a fan, as a youngster, went through 25 years of absolute futility after the 82 World Series team. You know, are fans getting a little spoiled? Is that possible? Am I being the guy yelling at a cloud or something like that? I mean, this is a team that's made the playoffs how many years in a row? How many years out of how many years? Won the Central Division. I mean, this is like a baseball renaissance in Milwaukee here. I get the upsetment about not advancing in the playoffs. And, you know, the bad luck, like last year, if you're a fan of the Brewers, it just sucked. I mean, to lose the way you did, yeah, it's terrible. But they're getting there. You know, I mean, what would you rather have? That it's like the chicken and the egg type thing. Do you want the Brewers to just absolutely go all in, trade all their prospects, Jesus, Mate, and everybody, and just bring in all the best players that they can if they're in the hunt, and then go for this World Series, and then go through like a 10-year drought where they just absolutely stink like the Royals did. You know, like I don't think anybody would really be happy with that. And if you're looking at it from Mark Adonazio's standpoint, a businessman, a guy who whether the fans want to believe it or not, is in this business to make money. You're not going to make money. You're not going to sell tickets if you have a team that just stinks for 10 years, you know? So try to think of it from that standpoint as well. I mean, you're kind of laughing and smirking and like the way you look at it,
yeah.
Maybe you look at it differently, but you know, I think that both things can be true. You know, like I think that you can be frugal, you can be smart. Is Mark Adonazio looking at the team and saying, well, hey, we won, you know, we've won these division titles, we've been to the playoffs with, and each year we spent a little bit less and we're doing it with a little bit less. You know, absolutely he's doing that. But at the same time, they've also managed to stay competitive. And if this blows up in their face this year and, you know, they get a couple injuries to key guys, if Christian Yelich is not able to come back from his back injury, you know, whatever the case may be, let's say they finish third or fourth in the division. Well, yeah, then they look stupid, and not then they got to kind of reconsider their battle plan moving forward. But I would say this franchise has earned the benefit of the doubt with the way it's performed in recent years. And I think that personally, I think that fans just need to chill out a little bit and maybe cut them a little bit of slack here. That's my perspective, honestly, but
yeah,
I know.
Well, you know, a lot. I mean, my feelings were well documented on the last episode of this podcast. I think there is a difference between overhauling it and just, you know, opening things up a little bit, going up with the tide a little bit. I do, but in defense of Mark Adonazio, I will say that every team is like this. Every team's fan base to some degree thinks their owner doesn't spend enough. Maybe not the Dodgers. I doubt that's happening right now, but every fan base thinks that their ownership could be doing more. Mark Adonazio is nowhere near the worst. And like you said, some owners don't speak at all. You know, the Orioles, when they were going through their whole ownership change, I mean, nobody could even talk to the owner. No one knew what he was thinking at all. So you have to give Adonazio credit for putting himself out there, being able to explain some of his point of view. I think sometimes in explaining, like you said, word salad, like he answers the question, but does he answer the question? He kind of just
answers
says
the question, contradicts himself. Yeah, I know.
It
can be confusing. And the other, you know, the other thing with this too is like, if you're a team owner, if you're a baseball executive, you're in baseball ops, and you know, this is a whole different topic, but you know, you're looking at what the Dodgers did in the offseason and you're looking at what the Mets did. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking at your team, if you're the Milwaukee Brewers and you're going, okay, I could go out and get player X over here and sign him to a $3 million deal, you know, for 1 year or whatever, that's not going to make a bit of difference in the big picture, because we ain't beating the Dodgers. We ain't beating the Mets. So why spend that money? What's the point, right? You know, like I think a lot of teams in the offseason thought about it the same way. Two-thirds of baseball was basically inactive, you know? You know, the Brewers were on that extreme end where they really added nobody. But I think that's going to be another thing with the next collective bargaining agreement. I think there's going to be some bloodshed. I think this is going to be uglier than 22, personally.
I think you're right.
Because there's going to have to be some sort of fundamental financial changes that evens the playing field a little bit. I don't think there's ever going to be a salary cap. I think that's a non-starter. But there's got to be some way to even the playing field a little bit for the small market teams. Some spend. The Brewers spend. Maybe not as much as fans want, but they spend. Look at what the Pirates do. I mean, look at how disgusted Pirates fans are. You know, they go to the playoffs those 3 years in the early teens and the early 10s, I should say, and then just nothing, and they do nothing every year. And now you've got this unbelievably good young pitching staff right now. To me, that's a team that, like, this division is ripe for the taking. Spend some money. Get some offense.
Yeah.
Oh, give these pitchers some help. They could be back to being a juggernaut if they can keep, you know, Skeens and Jones and Keller healthy, and they've got more pitching coming through the pipeline. You know, they could be really good. So It's just more food for thought. It's interesting conversation for sure.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think the real puzzle this year is the Cardinals. They're spending so little and they've always sort of overspent their market. You know, St. Louis is a middle to lower middle of the pack market and they've always spent like they're a top 10 team in baseball. And we're seeing that being retracted. And now they're kind of in, you know, they're not Pirates territory. And I think that they're still spending more than the Brewers, but they have gone so much further down from last year. And they don't look like a competitive team, at least not to the degree that they normally are. I think these TV deals, I think we're going to find out by the end of the, you know, the end of this season, maybe beyond, the impact of these TV deals falling apart, the sort of demise of cable is playing a huge role here. It's really taking money out of teams' pockets. The big fellas will still get to spend. And that's why, like you said, in 2026, after that season, when they go back to the bargaining table, they're going to have to come up with something creative. If the salary cap / salary floor is off the table, they're going to have to come up with something creative because people are going to bellyache about it forever. Yeah. You know, the Dodgers are probably going to win the next World Series. I mean, it's obviously small sample baseball. You never know, but the odds are pretty dang good. You spend that much and have those players, you're probably going to win.
So yeah, the TV stuff is huge. I don't think that can be overstated. You know, the Brewers and other small market teams, that's critical revenue. And when they don't have that, you get what you have right now, a drawback. And that question was asked of Mark Adonazio in that meeting as well. Like, you know, looking ahead to the next CBA negotiations with the cable TV model collapsing, you also have the Dodgers, you have the Mets, the Yankees, these mega market teams that have their own TV networks and everything and are just rolling in money. You know, are they going to be able to convince these big market teams like, hey, you got to start kicking some of this money to the children of the poor over here? You know, that's one way that you could do it. I'm sure they're going to fight that kicking and screaming. But like you said, there's going to have to be some creative solutions because players are never going to buy a salary cap. And there's only so many other ways that you can, you know, kind of slice the pie, so to speak. So Let's leave that for another day. It's kind of crazy to think it's only a few years away, and unfortunately, yeah. Like I said before, I think it's going to be ugly, and it could be a long stoppage again, like 22. So
yeah. It's awful to think about, but you're absolutely right. Before we wind this down, I'll give you the floor on what storylines you've been following that we haven't already brought up. Sal Frelick checked in as the, you know, best shape of his life guy. Yeah, always get one of those every spring, and he'd bulked up a little bit. But what else, you know, what other players have interested you? What other stories have interested you?
I'm sure you've been enthralled with my coverage and been reading everything.
I have, actually, yes.
As quickly as possible. Ernesto Martinez, I mean, Adam and I were talking the other day about, like, we're just absolutely pulling for this kid to be in the majors at some point. I don't, it's not going to happen out of camp, but he goes down in Nashville and rakes, you know, who knows? Just what a interesting guy, fun guy, terrific personality, great backstory, fun, and like a hell of a player, talented, you know, like physically the guy's like a freak and tall and like, you know, can do the splits, can hit the ball a mile. And I just kept thinking, I was watching him take batting practice one day last week, and I just kept thinking Prince Fielder, and not, you know, body types are way different. I'm not in any way comparing him to Prince Fielder in terms of skill. I'm just talking about the violence with which he swings the bat, you know, in batting practice, like trying to murder every ball, you know, and it just, the ball just jumps off his bat. So that to me has been a fun guy, and kind of that's going to be a fun story to kind of watch through camp. I always enjoy this is over with now, but before the games start, going and walking the backfields and kind of taking in the prospects and looking at some of the guys that, you know, are going to be coming through the pipeline coming up, and got my first chance to see Jesus Mahde up close and saw a pretty cool live batting practice battle between the Miz and Cooper Pratt the other day. It's fun. And to me, that's the best part of spring training, is just being able to wander around and you never know what you're going to, like, happen to see, who you're going to bump into, what's going on, you know, at a particular point in time, and the access that we get too. You know, I've had so much fun and I've gotten so much great insight. I've been using it in my stories regularly from Rick Sweet, Joe Arolt, the minor league managers and coaches who are around these prospects all the time. You know, like major league guys just kind of get the bird's eye view of them. They get the reports and they can talk in generalities, but these are the guys that are working with these kids every day. And, you know, they're, you know, the stuff that we find out from them is really insightful. So I've had a lot of fun talking to Cooper Pratt. I've been talking to him almost every day, and what a great kid, great personality. He's got a really good head on him. You know, so he's been fun to deal with. It's just, it's been a cool spring, and there's many more stories to tell. You know, it's hard to believe that I've been down here almost 2 weeks already, and it seems like I've just barely scratched the surface on things I want to write about and people I want to talk to and everything. And another little over another week from now, I'm going to be heading home, and Kurt's going to be tagging out to Kurt, and he'll be, you know, picking up the slack and, you know, attacking all the minor leaguers and prospects like he loves to do. So
he does. Yes.
Good thing. The baseball season's 162 games long, because there's a lot to take in, a lot to write about. And, you know, I've got a few more cool things kind of on the back burner here before my time is up in Arizona.
A couple of the stories I've really enjoyed at jsonline.com that you wrote, you got into Chad Patrick's backstory as a makeshift chef for AAA Nashville, cooking some cased meats. That plays into his first time he's on the 40-man roster. He had a tremendous year last year in Nashville. I think he's going to pitch games this year out of camp. No, but in general, I think at some point this year, we're going to see him. Also today, Sunday, you wrote about Abner Uribe, who's kind of on a comeback trail. He had a very, very star-crossed, might be a little too kind. I don't know how to put the 2024 season, but injured himself playing hacky sack. He was suspended. He was injured. He struggled when he was healthy. It's going to be a bounce back year for him in 2025. So I was really interested. Also, he's doing his interviews in English, which I think is really, really cool. He really, yep. It seemed like he speaks great English. Like he worked on that over the offseason. Tremendous stuff. I love the video that you have of him. So check that out again at jsonline.com.
I do want to say, not to cut you off, but that every year there's always a player or two that makes the effort to try it. And it's always fascinating to me, because years ago, MLB did not make available translators, you know, so you had to grab a teammate, you had to grab a coach or something like that. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Well, there's been more of a concerted effort to have those people there. There's no longer an MLB mandated translator available. One of the coaches, Daniel DeMazare, will do it when he's around, but he's also a coach and busy. So it helps us a lot as reporters for these guys to, you know, A, give it an effort, and B, trust us enough to want to do it. So it helps when there's not a bunch of cameras in their face. William Contreras is another guy who's made an effort, and his English has gotten much better too. And he will speak to us without a translator as well. So I big hat tip to all the guys who try. You know, I make sure positive reinforcement after every one of these. And you could tell after we talked to Abner that he was pretty proud of himself, and he should be, because that's a guy that, you know, 2 years ago, I can't say that he didn't know a lick of English, but there was no chance that he was ever going to do an interview in English. And now he's comfortable enough to do it. So to me, the next logical player, the next guy that needs to make that step is Jackson Chourio.
Sure.
Look at what Ellie De La Cruz did last year in Cincinnati. He realized that, and he said this publicly, that, hey, I'm the face of the franchise now. The fans are interested in me. It's incumbent on me to learn English and to be able to communicate with the fans directly. So, you know, the Brewers make English speaking classes, teachers available to Latin players. That starts way in the lowest level of the minor leagues. So I think that, you know, to take that next step, Jackson Chourio, help your marketability, you know, it helps you relate to fans. Fans already love you. You know, you can do no wrong in their eyes. To be able to communicate with them directly and speak to them in English, I think is huge. So not saying it's going to happen this year, but I, in my personal opinion, I think that's something that, you know, he needs to consider and maybe take a little bit more seriously moving forward, because it can do nothing but help him.
Yeah. And we should point out players face extraordinary pressure, you know, like to tweak their baseball game. It's hard to add that onto it. Guy like Jackson Chourio hasn't been in the United States for very long, so it's going to take some time. And certainly we can understand that. It's just, but you are right when you sort of take down one of the barriers, you know, have players be able to speak in a way that all fans can understand. It does probably help their cause in terms of visibility, in terms of being the face of a franchise. But yeah, it's tough. It's not something that, you know, I would not want to be, you know, I don't speak Spanish at all. Actually, I'm terrible at Spanish. But I speak a little French. If I were to be giving an interview in French, I would be so embarrassed, because I'm sure it is the most rudimentary sounding Yankee sounding French. And I would not want that out there. So I completely understand if players.
Yeah. And we talk amongst ourselves too. Every off season, it's like, oh, maybe I should try to learn Spanish. You know, I took it in school and forgot it, you know, years ago. That's something that legitimately, I mean, it definitely would help. You know, Kurt speaks Spanish, that helps him big time. And again, it's like the opposite. When players hear us trying, they get excited, and they give you credit for trying as well. So, Ernesto Martinez, that's another thing. He speaks four languages, you know, Spanish, English, French, and Haitian Creole. Yeah, that was in my story too. So I asked him. When he learned to speak English, because he speaks it great. Like, a little bit of an accent, but he's like fluent. And he learned English when he was living with Eric Gagne down here, trying to be a pitcher in Arizona years ago.
Did he learn his French from Eric Gagne too?
No, his father is a French citizen. Actually, he played for the French national team way back when. So I asked Ernesto how he learned English, and he said, well, I was walking around Scottsdale and I was always seeing all these pretty girls, but I couldn't speak to them. I couldn't know what to say. So I went back to Eric's house and I said, Eric, I want to talk to these girls. How do I do it? So Gagne downloaded Rosetta Stone on one of his kids' tablets, gave it to Ernesto, and Ernesto said he learned English in 2 months, and then he was talking to all the pretty girls. So, hey, whatever your motivations are, it's good, right?
I am pulling for Ernesto Martinez even more so now, knowing that backstory. You compared him to Prince Fielder. I feel like Prince Fielder could also do the splits. Maybe at one point in his career, there was a sneaky athleticism to Fielder that we don't often give him credit for. But Ernesto can definitely do the splits at first base.
It's so damn impressive, because the guy, he's a legit 6'6". You know, I'm 6'4". Yeah. He's definitely taller than me. To see a guy that, like, literally get – that far down in the dirt, it's like, holy cow. And he did it in game one, you know, the game on Saturday, and it made the difference between it to me. It was a bang bang play at first. They got the out. You know, it helps pitchers, it helps your fielders when you got a gigantic target like that that can do that.
Yeah, also homered in that game, did Ernesto Martinez, that Saturday opener, so good for him. We're not yet at the point here where we do our various segments, three up, three down, take of the week. We're not doing that yet. It's not a remember when full-fledged, but I did have a story at jsonline.com about Yutaka Inatsu, a player who was in spring training for the Brewers 40 years ago in 1985, and really cool story. He was a Japanese legend. He was at the end of his career. He was 36 and he was kind of out of gas, but he was a stud in Japan. And there's some really funny stories about him, and he got to face Reggie Jackson in spring training, which was a big deal for him. So if you have a chance, check that out at jsonline.com. It was in the Sunday Journal Sentinel as well. Fun look back there. But Tata, I'm flirting with the idea of doing a trivia question each week, just to get the brain cells firing for our listeners. Most of them will probably be pretty easy for the average Brewers fan, but this one I was digging up because Vinny Capra now, of course, with six RBIs, probably, you know, has the inside track now to lead the team in RBIs in spring training. And I was looking up other guys in spring training who kind of were big in spring and then maybe not so much in the regular season. And I found two recent instances, 2009 and 2011, where the guy who led the Brewers in RBIs that spring training ended up not even getting a hit. Did get major league at bats, but did not even get a hit that season, and actually at no point again did they get a hit for the Brewers thereafter. So I'm wondering if you know these guys. 2011 is pretty obscure. There was a player who hit just one homer and had 14 RBIs. Yeah, he was, I believe, a small
free agent. I think I have both of them.
What do you got? Tell me.
Well, that year was Eric Almonte, right?
No. Almonte, though, was tied for first, but Eric Almonte did actually get hits with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I think that's actually 2014.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. He had a homer on an opening day in Cincinnati and then never did any. He got hit in the head with the ball, had the concussion, yeah. And we never saw him again.
It was actually a real bummer. Yeah, a huge bummer. But yes, he is also a guy that I was looking at. Jim Edmonds as well, going back a little bit. But yes, Eric Almonte came up, but he's not one of these two guys.
2011, that was my first year on the beat, and I did not cover spring training that year because I was wrapping up Marquette. They were in the tournament.
Got it.
Jeremy Reed?
That's the one! Jeremy Reed! You did it! Amazing! Amazing! Yes. Jeremy Reed, 2011, the year they went to Game 7 of the NLCS, their stud in spring training was Jeremy Reed. Now, yeah. 2009 is a little easier, even if you weren't there, because 2009, this player who had four homers and 19 RBIs in spring training, he was awesome. And then famously in the big leagues, he was there for a while and went like 21 at-bats and did not get a hit. Got sent back down and never came back to the big leagues.
Brad Nelson.
Brad Nelson, that's correct. Brad Nelson.
Yeah. All right, I did pretty well.
You kicked butt, man. I mean, if you're going to get the spring training ones, I don't think I'm going to be able to slip anything else past you unless I go back in time to like the 70s or something.
Yeah, I'm not that good. We could do some fun immaculate grids or something out here and have some laughs.
Yeah, I know you love that. Yeah. Daily walk-off today. I don't know if you do that one. Daily walk-off. That was a tough one today. If people are still listening, well, they won't be listening. If there's some way to go back in time a day on Daily Walk Off, you're going to want to play Sunday. That was a fun one.
I've actually with the Immaculate Grid, I've stopped playing every day now. The only way I will play is if it's possible to have all nine squares be ex-Brewers.
Yes.
I just try to challenge myself more by doing that. So there's been the recent run, there's not been any possibilities of all nine Brewers, so I just haven't done them. But whenever I do see one, that excites me and gets me going, and it's good for my mind, you know. Keeps it working.
It's true. That's those puzzles are a lot of fun. Anything else, Todd? I think we're about done here. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah. The only other thing I can think of is just you know, Bob Uecker. You know, what can you say? It was very weird, very strange, very sad being at the ballpark yesterday and not seeing him in the radio booth anymore. You know, that was always a highlight for us reporters, Adam and me, Tom and Adam. You know, every spring when you could pop into the booth for the first time, we go over and check in with them and laugh and, you know, how was your off season? He'd tell the jokes and tell the stories and then covering the games. You know, the games can be a slog. You know, a week in, you're already like, oh man, can this be over already? But you look over through the glass to the right there and you see Bob in his chair and, you know, you look back smiling or, you know, be yelling about a bad scoring call or something. And it just like all was right with the world, you know. And then to go into that booth yesterday and I tweeted out the picture of the empty chair and the flowers and the picture, it just really kind of hit home. And you know, you feel so bad for Jeff Levering and Lane Grindle, Ken Sommerfeld, Tony Migliaccio in the clubhouse was such a close friend of Bob's, people in the organization. It just, you know, your heart breaks for everybody. And it's going to be a tough year. You know, opening day is going to, the home opener is going to be really difficult as well. And just kind of moving forward, because that's all we've ever known, right? And not hearing him on the radio and everything, but you know, hopefully he's looking down on us and laughing and, you know, watching and having fun and doing all the Uke things that we remember and love about him. So yeah, that was the other thing that kind of stood out to me. You know, being around the ballpark, it's just different, and it'll take a while to get used to it because he was the Brewers, that's for sure.
You know, somebody else pointed this out. I listened to that first game on the radio because it wasn't televised, and it kind of dawned on me then too. Somebody articulated it like he's on so many of those commercials between you know, between innings. It isn't just that he's calling the game, but, you know, there'd be a Usinger spot or, you know, pretty much anything. Uecker was bound, his voice was bound to come up during the commercials, and now that's gone. And it really struck me then, oddly enough. It wasn't that, because, you know, there were plenty of games where he wasn't available or, you know, it was just a different team that day. But, you know, just to not hear him at all is unexpectedly weird. I mean, I shouldn't say unexpectedly. It's expectedly weird. It's going to be very different, a very different experience this season for Brewers fans on the radio. For Todd Rosiak, that's going to do it for this edition of Micro Brew. We'll be back again next week talking about all the hopefully there is no more news, because again, news during spring training is not often good. Maybe there's a roster move or two, but hopefully it's a little more quiet on the injury front this coming week. And we'll be back again on Monday morning next week. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.